afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost an hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about for 50 minutes every afternoon. The season finale of Walking Dead last night, and still pretty much the only show I watch on TV. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I would... Preacher, when it comes back around, I'll watch that. Into the Badlands, I've kind of lost interest. Honestly, I don't know. It's just not captivating me the way the first season did. But I will watch Preacher because it's quirky and bizarre and weirdo enough for me to really enjoy. And then Walking Dead, it still is keeping that moral thread, which I find very appealing. And we'll talk about that, what that means in the grand scheme of things, and maybe even how it all relates to the history of this country, oddly enough. I'll pull all of that together in the show today. Cardinal Burke coming out with his perspective on Amoris Laetitia, and of course, divorced and remarried Catholics. We'll talk about that. And also, now in St. Petersburg, Russia, an obvious terror attack, what this means. We've seen challenges in Russia's history before, and not sure exactly all the details of this yet, but tragedy there, and prayers for those who have been involved. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Back, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. I mentioned a moment ago the finale of The Walking Dead, and the message that's still there. I've seen it from the beginning, and even though they've changed writers and directors, and you know Kirkman's original vision, I think, has remained intact. The comic book's not the same as the TV show by any means, if you're a graphic novel reader, as they call them. But the thread of human morality in the wake of something of this nature, the good versus evil, those that are opportunist, those that are pure of intent, still remains. And it's great to see that, and I know that there's been criticism back and forth, up and down, all around on this program, season to season, episode to episode. You never know what is going to happen from fans and critics. But the one thing I will say is that they still deliver. They deliver, especially on that ethic of it's, and no spoilers, if you haven't seen it, if you've DVR'd it and you're waiting to watch it, or you're going to watch it on Netflix or whatever service you may have, the message, however, still is one of, we're here for others, right? We're here to give ourselves, even sacrificially if we have to, so others have opportunity. What a powerful message. And it's something that in our world, in our nature, in our human nature of greed and self-preservation and isolationism, that needs to be heard now more than ever, because this is the message, right? This is what it's about. This is certainly the Christian ethos, if we were to ever understand it, is I give so you gain. I give so you gain. And if we do that, if we all have that attitude that I'm going to give so you can gain, well, guess what? Somebody else is going to give to us so we can gain. It's this perpetuating model of generosity that will get us to the next level, ideally. Now, we don't see that illustrated very well in real life. We generally see I gain and I take. And I take, and I gain, right? I win, you lose. How many times have I said, that is, I promise you, that is the Trump mantra, and it's throughout all of his books, Art of the Deal, Think Big, Kick Ass, you name it, all of this. I win, you lose. And it's not a popular message to say, I give, you gain. I give, you gain. But I promise you, that's there in The Walking Dead, and it still remains there. And that's what differentiates the good from the bad. The good guys are the ones who will give so others gain. The bad guys are the guys who take and others lose. And shouldn't it be understood that this is how we kind of differentiate the sheep and the goats, right? As Jesus says, he looks at the batch and says, there are those who are obviously willing to give of themselves so others can flourish. Whatever that individual needs, they don't turn their back on them, wherever they happen to be, whatever they happen to be doing. And if we all lived like that, it's what I've said before, this is how we baptize, right? It's words are cheap. They mean nothing. But if we can show in our actions, if we can truly show in the way we give of ourselves, if we can really show that, that there's something about the way we're willing to give that allows others to live, that's it, right? That's it. Love God, love others. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We overcomplicate, we over orchestrate, I think, at times. And as a result, we leave others with their heads spinning because we then become the judge and arbiter of others' lives. That's the problem. That's the challenge that critics see in Christianity, is that it appears as though we're there just simply to judge, simply to be the one who wants to change them, as opposed to be the one who wants to give to them, regardless of whether they are good or bad or whatever society, religion, ethics, whatever, who cares? That's not what it's about. We don't give to the guy who is good. We give to the guy who is in need, right? We don't help the person who is morally upright. We help the person who needs help, regardless of who that is. And that's a countercultural message that just makes people's heads spin. Because, yeah, of course we help those who are contributing and productive and in this utilitarian, pragmatic sort of way of seeing things, that it all makes sense. But when you turn that all around and say, it doesn't matter, this guy might be scum of the earth, we still treat him with nothing but the utmost respect and nothing but the utmost opportunity and willingness to give to him. That's what's crazy, right? That's what turns it all around and upside down. But again, that thread, that moral thread of giving so others gain is still there in The Walking Dead, and I applaud that. Over the weekend, I heard an interview on an NPR program on being, I'm pretty sure is the one from NPR, where they were interviewing a Native American and of the Standing Rock group, and she was talking about the history of Native Americanism and the fact that in the 1860s, there was an uprising of the Dakota Sioux, and the Sioux of the Dakota areas just kept getting their land more and more and more restricted, to the point that finally there was a response by these individuals who were here first, and the result of that was a mass execution of some 60, I think, of the Sioux tribe who were found guilty of this uprising, which resulted in the deaths of white Americans. Now, all of this in the Lincoln administration, where there was already challenges to this country with a division taking place, and Lincoln then having to execute a group of Native Americans as well. And yeah, I've admired Lincoln's presidency to be able to try to pull things together with such a difficult dynamic. But at the same time, you look at that and think, you know, why were we doing that in the first place? I mean, that's what I got to ask. And I know that that's an unpopular position. I know it makes me look un-American when I ask the question, why were we restricting their land? Why do we think that that was even a good thing? Why did we have to come into this territory and say, we're here now, so we're taking over? I mean, I know we have this American exceptionalism, and I know we have this attitude of we're rugged individualists that have always survived. But when our survival is based on conquering others, I think we really got to ask questions about that. You go back to look at the Catholic settlements of the South Florida area, of Florida and the southern areas of the country, even from Mexico forward, we found a lot of, let's put it this way, we found much more integration of culture, because Spanish, who came here, and the reason why we have a Hispanic population, the reason why we have these brown-skinned individuals, was not because Spanish Europeans came and looked like that, right? They came and integrated with the culture of the natives. And if we were to have taken the same lead, we would no longer be white people, right? Because the natives of this country, the red-skinned, brown-skinned, whatever, would have been the way this country began to flourish and grow. And there's a difference between a Catholic ethos and that of a puritanical or this very restrictive understanding of religion that says, you got to be like us. Catholic says it's universal, right? We're not here as nationalists. We're here as people of faith and an understanding that says we're in this together. And it shows. It literally shows when you look at the countries that have integrated into a native culture along with the colonial culture, which has always been a challenge. There's never been a time that's been great. But at the same time, I think the evidence clearly shows that Catholics have been able to do it a whole heck of a lot better. So, Walking Dead, colonialism, the ethic of giving so others gain, all wrapped into one. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Back, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Colonel Burke coming out with comments regarding marriage and remarriage, annulments, communion, all of the above. Crux now with that report. And, of course, one of the most outspoken critics on Amoris Laetitia's seemingly confusing footnote that seems to suggest that there's some sort of internal forum that can take place, and that basically with that it means anything goes, which, as I read Amoris Laetitia, I did not see that. I didn't see it was an anything goes anything. And at the same time, I think that what Burke's position is as far as it being a difficult situation and chastity being the key is still what Pope Francis is suggesting in this, except simply saying, can we find a way to make an irregular situation regular more quickly? That has been one of these elements since the beginning. If the church has the authority to bind and loosen, and if that binding and loosening is even extended to the priesthood through the sacrament of reconciliation, is there a way to extend that to the pastorship of a church to say, you know what, we can work this out so this isn't an issue, right? We can work through this to make this a actual opportunity to get things back on track and to make this work the way it's supposed to work. That's part of this, right? That's absolutely part of this question and part of this solution is the church's ability to bind and loosen. This is what Pope Francis is referencing in this understanding of there can be, even in those cases, a degree of internal forum for that. So it's not this unfortunate hurdle that few will even actually attempt to climb, right? That's what we deal with. And that's why we have the challenges that we have in the church when it comes to divorce and remarriage, because few see it as a healing opportunity and more of a hurdle. Some way we've got to change that. And I think that, as I understand it, is the heart that we hear from Pope Francis on this issue, the heart of saying, this has to be understood differently. We have to see where we can actually go with this, what we can actually do when it comes to bringing true healing into the lives of others, true healing into the lives of these devoted Catholics. I speak with pastors all the time, and I've had very revealing conversations with those who say, yes, there are those who are so dedicated and so devoted and so faithful, more so even, right, than those in quote-unquote regular situations. They happen to be divorced. They happen to be remarried. It's all civil, and for whatever reason, there's a substantial hurdle to ever really getting this officially recognized and regulated and convalidated and all of the above, because those annulment processes for some are just so impossible. I mean, you think about it, if there's a situation where there was an abusive individual in a relationship who does not want to cooperate, you're kind of stuck as a divorced individual trying to get through that dynamic. Because what do you do with that? Now you got somebody who simply will not cooperate on your side of this dynamic to make this work. You can't make it work. You can't get the cooperation to resolve this. As I understand it, that's one of the major problems in this whole thing. Because now we can't follow the process of the annulment because we've got a irregular situation. We've got a marriage that is civilly divorced, civilly dissolved, but sacramentally in limbo. And as I understand it, and again, I may be wrong, but as I understand it, that's the problem. That's the primary problem. It's not that people don't want to do this. It's not that people are too lazy or they're too whatever, full of themselves or against the church or what. They have a sincere desire to make something work that just is not working. They can't get this figured out. They can't make it happen. And then they're stuck in this bizarre sort of limbo of like, well, okay, you got two options, right? Do you want to receive the sacraments? Then quit having sex. Do you want to have sex? Well, quit receiving the sacraments, right? And that's a pretty difficult place to be, especially when the marital union is the prayer of the couple. It is the sacramentality. It is the expression. You know, it's the model for Christ in the church. So you could say, well, what they really should be doing is receiving the Eucharist and not doing that. But then this is the model for the culture, right? So how are we doing this? What are we doing? What do we have backwards? Because we should be giving couples every opportunity to model what we're trying to present as people of faith, which is this one flesh union, which is expressed most appropriately and most illustratively through the marital embrace, right? I mean, so we've got this, it really seems like something's wrong. As I look at this, I have to say, how are we doing this disservice? And I don't know. I mean, I probably misread Pope Francis in this. I don't know. But it seems like he's asking that same question. And then it seems like there are those who are more, by the letter of the law, more, if you will, traditionalists in the understanding of this is how this has to work, that are simply saying this is how it has to work. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I kind of believe as I've, you know, there's been that degree of criticism. I think that there are some celibate men who obviously have a very sincere heart for those in marital relationships, as Pope Francis seems to, as my goodness, Pope John Paul II, Saint John Paul II, how he intimated what he did as far as the bonds of matrimony and the dynamics of male-female relationships, unbelievable. I mean, he just understood this in a very interesting way for a celibate man to get, but he did. Pope Francis, I think, has a very sincere approach on that as well. But if you're in this, as most of us are, in a world of heterosexual union and having a sincere desire to express your sexuality, and especially if whatever the way it was supposed to work didn't work, and now you've got the opportunity to make it work, right? But now you're prohibited from being a part of your church because of you just happen to be in a functioning relationship, a functioning marital relationship, because you came from one that was dysfunctional. Now that's functional, but now your faith is dysfunctional. But, right? I mean, see, that's where I see this really having the opportunity to find a solution for those in that, especially if, most particularly if, my goodness, absolutely if they are focused on making it right, if they really, really have a desire to make this right, that's what we should. Why are we not giving them that opportunity? Why can we not find ways to say, okay, let's open these doors for you and let's get in here and get this done as effectively, as personally, as internally as possible? I don't know why there's opposition to that. It seems as though the question then is, well, then we're just opening the door to adultery. No, we're not. No, we're not. Because adultery, I mean, let's be honest, if that's what you're dealing with, you go to confession and it's done, right? I mean, if that's your sin, you just go to confession for that. That's a confessable, forgivable sin. It's when you step outside of the bonds of matrimony, civilly dissolved, and now you're with a new partner, that you seem to be in a perpetual state of adultery when you're really just with this one individual. And that seems to be punished somehow because of the dynamic. We got to look at this, and that's what Pope Francis is willing to look at. Once we get on the same page of that and understand that there is a possible fast track of annulment and regularity in these relationships, my goodness, right? I mean, that seems like it would be a real opportunity to heal. Why would we want to oppose that? That's what I don't understand. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things, 50 minutes every afternoon. We apparently have recent tweets coming out over the weekend, from what I gather, looking at my Twitter feed and seeing that it appears that our president is still challenged by the apparent revelation that Hillary Clinton had questions prior to the debate in one of these debates, and I'm going to share the details on this. But yeah, you know, here's the thing: yeah, you know, when you win, just go on and just be a winner, right? Just do it, do your thing. You've won. No one cheated you, or if there was cheating, it was to your advantage, right? So I don't understand this. Let's go back and pick on something from last year when we should just be focusing on making America great again. Isn't that what we should be focusing on? Isn't that why this gentleman was elected? Everybody wants to talk about butthurt and snowflakes, which I've said, let's just not even use these terms ever again anymore. But I hear this all the time. Butthurt, snowflake, snowflake, butthurt. Butthurt, snowflake. Well, who are the butthurt snowflakes? The ones that complain about things? The ones who think that things are wrong, that there's some sort of injustice and that they want to see things different? Who's doing the most of that? Do we follow Donald, the real Donald J. Trump on Twitter? And what's he doing? Right? Sounds pretty butthurt and snowflakish, if you ask me. There's got to be a time where we say, you know what? We're going to get bigger. We're going to get way bigger than any of this stuff that we could potentially get mired into. We're going to get way, way big. And at the same time, focus on the little things that we've got to focus on in order to achieve what we've got to achieve. But we're just not going to live in the past anymore. We're not going to live with the hurt of yesterday. And it's hard. I get that. You know, Pope Francis was in the community there, the earthquake from a couple of years ago, saying Mass over the weekend and basically saying, look, you know, the scars are always going to be there. We'll always have those scars. But it's where we go now that really matters. And isn't that the message of everything, of our lives as humans, of our Christian faith? We need to be able to somehow say, let's move beyond this. Let's try to move beyond this, because dwelling and being stuck and deciding that this is what we're going to just get hung up on and never get beyond, this doesn't get us anywhere. We've got thousands of years of challenges that people still deal with. And we fight wars over tribalism that occurred so, so long ago. Yeah, you know, we've got We got injustice, as I mentioned earlier, we got injustice in this country. We were built on injustice. I'm sorry. We like to tout liberty and justice for all while saying, oh, you people who were here first, I'm sorry, you got to go live in this tiny little area, and then we're going to keep encroaching on that. Is that just? I don't think so. We were built on injustice. But that doesn't mean that we have to dwell on that. And I think if you, from what I understand, and granted, I know no one personally who is a Native American living in Native American reservation territory. I know no one personally. But it kind of seems like, even given the challenges, they've kind of made the most of it, or at least tried to make the most of it. And I know that's a gross overstatement, understatement, whatever, whichever side you want to look at. But at the same time, there's kind of a lesson in all of this for all of us. Right? The more we dwell on the past, and the more we're determined to whatever because of the hurt, just to keep dredging it back, the more we're just going to stay stuck. We're just going to stay stuck. Is there a way to say, we're going to forget about that? Today's a new day. We're going to move this thing forward. We're going to see what we can go with here. We're going to see where we can get. We're going to do what we can. We're going to try to make this work in a different way. I know when there are scars, when there's pain, when there's suffering, when there's what we have perceived as injustice, what we perceived as attack, what we perceived as us being in this unfortunate situation of having to ask the questions of why. Why did this happen? Why did this happen to me? What is this all about? When we have to find ourselves here, it makes it really, really tough. I get it. But grace is bigger. God is bigger. We can rise above and say, you know what? We're not going to be a snowflake or a butthurt. Oh, hate those terms. Ah, makes me cringe. We're just not going to do that. We're not going to go there. We're not going to let ourselves go there because we're bigger. God is bigger. Grace is bigger. We can see a bigger picture. Because as long as we're in that mentality of going back and nitpicking it, it just makes us look really small. I mean, that's what I think. When I see Donald Trump going back and President Trump, when I see him going back and talking about things of this nature, it's like, how petty. Aren't there bigger things to focus on? Aren't there way bigger things that have to be done? You know, I don't know what the legacy of this president is going to be. It's still too soon to tell. But so far, it's kind of looking like a lot of smallness. It's kind of looking like, let's pick these little things apart as opposed to really see a big picture and go, okay, let's look at this really differently. You know, he's been a real estate tycoon, which real estate is, it's niche, right? It's very niche. And there are those who've done amazingly well. Obviously, he's one who's made money buying and selling real estate, or buying and leasing real estate, or building and leasing. And but that's a niche that is, you could say it's a big picture, but it's really not, because you're not there going, how do we solve problems? How do we go into this situation and create something that's never been, you know, from total scratch, something new? Well, it's a formula. You know what the formula is. It's been done. You're going down this road of getting it done. You're not trailblazing. You're not in mission territory. You're not doing it. It is just not. And I don't say that to discredit those who are great at real estate, because it's a gift to be able to do anything. It's a gift to have a skill set that you understand this dynamic so well that you're going to do it well. I don't question that. And I applaud anyone who does what they do well. But just because you do this well does not mean it translates. Right? There's a beautiful book called The E-Myth Revisited. And it's worth reading for anyone. Definitely worth reading for anyone in business. But even if you're not, to understand how systems work, it's amazing. And the thing about systems, one system is not the same for the other. You can't just overlay systems. Now, you can, with a systematic understanding of how things work, say, okay, this system worked here. Can we translate that? But you can't overlay a system. But basically, in this book, it says there are those who are great technicians, right? They know their stuff. They know their craft. And in the book, it's a pie maker who is so excellent and so amazing. Everyone says, you need to have your own place because you're just making money for this guy and you're the talent. And what does she do? She goes and gets her own place and she's working 18, 20 hours a day, not able to pay her bills because she hasn't made a dime. And all she's doing is technically doing this thing without any systems. And she can't get out of it. She's got no exit strategy. It's her making pies. It's not even her developing recipes that others can make, teaching them how to make her pies. It's just her making pies because she's the talent. And if that's what you've got in this very narrow sort of understanding, you're never going to have this ability to move beyond that. So, you know, all we heard was, oh, we got to have a businessman in office because he knows how to run business. Well, he might know how to lease property, right? He may know how to do that. And he may know how to build with ways of keeping the costs low and keeping his investment down for the greatest return. That might be his skill set. That might be it. You don't need diplomacy. You don't need an understanding of foreign policy or even domestic policy. You don't need anything. You don't need to know how to negotiate, really, to where people, like I say, come around a table and everybody wins. That's not a dynamic you need. You can be incredibly successful with a very limited understanding of that one system that just happens to show a significant return on investment. That's all you need. It may not translate. And that's what I'm thinking. That's what I said before, but that's what I think we're seeing now more than ever, is it just doesn't translate. All we have time for this afternoon. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.